From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And along with your call, Zorba, some topics to talk about.
Yeah, we're going to talk about taking vacations. Is it in your best interest? I don't just mean, is it in your best interest for life, because we know that. But is it going to improve your longevity? And sleeping with the television on. What does that mean for your weight? We'll talk about an interesting study that shows it might be an easy way to shed some pounds.
Interesting. And our recipe.
Veggie sandwiches. Grilled veggie sandwiches. Great this time of year. Great anytime. Time of year. In fact, now that you can get vegetables 24/7 around the country today, a grilled veggie sandwich is a great alternative to a grilled burger.
It sounds good to me. It sounds good to me. I like veggies. To the phones we go now, Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. As we welcome our first caller, a listener in Mendenhall, Mississippi. Hi.
Hey, how are we doing today?
Fine. How can we help?
Yes, sir. I had a question for Dr. Zorba. I was a quadriplegic when I was 16 years old, and I had an incomplete C5 and C6.
Wow.
And I made almost a complete 100% recovery as, you know, doctors gave me a 0% chance to ever move again the rest of my life. And now I'm up, running, jumping, you know, just about back to the normal.
Oh, yeah, great.
I still have a lot of nerve damage in my left side.
Sure.
And I was just trying to get, you know, options to see what would be the best way, tips and stuff for help. Because I have, like, really bad back pain to only be 25. I feel like I'm 60.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, pain can do that.
You know?
I got to ask a question. First of all, how did you get the accident? What sort of accident was it?
I used to be a gymnast, and I trained for competitions and stuff, and I messed up on the spring floor and dove on top of my head. Yeah, and I landed right on top of my head, and they had to put a big 8-inch scar on the back of my neck to put metal and a rod in my neck, and then they had to change the disc in the front because it slipped and severed my spinal cord.
So you must have, in terms of the spinal cord, they must have partially severed it, then other stuff came back. I mean, the spinal cord doesn't regrow once it's completely severed. So you were able to get back to the point where you're moving and you're doing things, but you have, at this point, you've got chronic pain. Is that what's going on?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Are you taking anything for it at all? Or have you taken anything?
I don't. I'm trying to do like a whole natural, you know, healthy. I eat kratom, like you make teas and stuff with that. That's what a lot of them. Of course, they just wanted to give me a bunch of pain medicine, but I'm just not into all that. So I was trying to find more, you know, better all natural ways and stuff.
Well, I've got a couple questions. Before we talk about natural ways, I do want to talk about it. Opioids do nothing at all for neuropathic pain. We now know. We thought maybe they were useful. We thought maybe they were functional. Maybe they would make a difference. We now know they don't do very much at all. We do know that anti-seizure medications like gabapentin and pregabalin do work for neuropathic pain and can be very functional. Have you ever used those?
I think I used Xanaflex. A long time ago when I was in the hospital.
And it's a different drug. That's actually a muscle relaxer. That can produce sleepiness. So I just want to mention, before we do the natural things, for chronic pain, there are many people, just like a lot of people, have epilepsy, and they're on a seizure medication, and they do well, and they're functional. Pregabalin or gabapentin, in an appropriate dose, anywhere between 300 milligrams a day and 2,400 milligrams a day, may reduce your pain significantly. I just want to mention that from that point of view. Another drug, duloxetine, which is an antidepressant, can also make a difference for pain. So just kind of put that off to the side as one option in there. So let's now talk about the natural options. Have you done acupressure or acupuncture at all?
I haven't, actually. I've been looking into it, but I haven't ever found anybody that has done it before to actually give me a good, you know, opinion on it.
Right. So one of the things about acupuncture is for some people it really works, and for other people it doesn't do very much at all. And acupressure would be one of the things I would look at, because acupressure versus acupuncture may be something that you can eventually learn to do on your own. There are a number of YouTube videos on acupressure, and we're going to put that on our website. I'll make sure that Carl puts that up. But acupressure is one option that you may want to have in terms of this. The other options that I'm kind of thinking of is more exercise or stuff. What are you actually doing for stretching and moving your body?
Well, I definitely have to stretch in the mornings because if I don't, I'm real shaky then. Right. Especially, like I said, I had a lot of nerve damage more on my left side. And my right side came back to 100%. My left side, I would say, about 90.
Have you looked into Pilates as an exercise for this?
I did yoga for a while, just a stretch.
I think I would go to Pilates, and especially Pilates. The Pilates that use basically these are machines that are used, and what they do is you're using part of your body to stretch other parts of your body because they're pulleys and levers, and sometimes Pilates can make a big difference from a natural point of view, getting your body in motion. Yoga, excellent idea to try, but I think in your case I would try Pilates and see what Pilates would do. You know, we know that the more we use our body, and you're the perfect example of somebody who used their body, got back function, and you're young and you got back function and you decided you're not going to take it sitting down, will make a difference. I think I would hit the Pilates and see what that would do. I don't think, by the way, supplements are the way to go. I don't think any supplement is going to make a difference. I think from your point of view, it's exercise with Pilates. It's acupressure. Acupuncture might work, but I think acupressure is the way to go. And as I said, we'll put it on the website. But if that doesn't work for pain, I would look at gabapentin or pregabalin. Just even a bedtime can make a big difference. It could just tamp down those nerves that are ringing, causing you pain, causing you discomfort, and they might really help.
Doc, I appreciate it a lot, you know, because they gave me a 0% chance to ever move again in my life.
Whoa.
Yeah. You sure showed them up. 0% chance
right.
And you're moving.
For a year and a half, I was in a wheelchair for a year and a half. Ooh. And then just one day, things started coming back. And before I knew it, I was up running around.
That's incredible. You know? Well, keep up the good work.
Definitely. And man, I appreciate it a lot. And thank you, Dr. Zorba, Mr. Tom, for all the help.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you for that.
Thanks
call.
For your call.
Glad he made it to the phone to
well,
call us.
Well, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing that somebody who was given a 0% chance they're actually going to do things
really
again.
Great. Yeah.
But it shows you when you've got two things. When you've got a neurological injury, we physicians don't always know exactly what's going on. We may think we know and we may assume that. But then on the other aspect, you've got somebody who goes, wait a minute, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to use whatever I can, and they can get back amazing function as long as that cord wasn't completely severed. And that's really what made the difference.
800-462-7413, our number. You'll find a line right now if you'd like to call us. But for our next call, Zorba, I love this topic, taking a vacation. You know, I hate this working an hour week.
I know. You've got that 80-hour work week, Tom. I'll tell you, I used to have an 80-hour work week. I don't have it now. But there's a very, very interesting study out of the University of Helsinki in Finland. So the Finns, the Norwegians, the Swedes, they all work very hard. And so there was a particular study that they looked at. They looked at a little over 1,000, 1,200 businessmen, no women involved in the study, businessmen.
Okay.
Between the ages of 40 and 55 in 1974 and 1975, long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Divided them into two groups. One was the intervention group. One was the control group. Okay, so in the intervention group, every 4 months, the men were advised to eat healthy, exercise, quit smoking. Okay, this is 1974. Quit smoking. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In the control group, they were not really advised anything. They would just kind of do whatever you want to, but some of them made a difference. And lo and behold, as you would expect, the intervention group reduced their risk of cardiovascular disease by 45-46% after 5 years. Their cholesterol is better, they'd quit smoking and so on, blah blah blah. All that stuff that you would expect. But they then followed up with all these participants later on in 2014 to see who lived and who died.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, the difference in the intervention group and the control group tended to disappear. And the reason was it appeared that the people in the control group who weren't told, here you have to exercise, eat better, blah, 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 and all that other stuff, didn't take vacations. The people in the control group who weren't advised to do anything took more vacations than the people in the intervention group. And that made all the difference. It appeared that taking the vacation appeared to be a stress reducer that made a difference in their lifespan. In other words, taking time off for vacation. They also looked at sleep and whether or not they slept more. The life and death isn't just due to reducing your blood pressure by blood pressure medication or your cholesterol by Lipitor, but it also appears to be taking more vacation. Shocking, isn't it?
That's a great idea.
I'm shocked the vacation would be good for you. Now, this is very interesting because it comes into conjunction with a very interesting study that came out of Japan. In Japan, they have something called forest bathing.
Forest bathing.
Bathing. Bathe in the forest. In other words, picture Japan. You know, it's an island with 100 million people, and there's, you know, many people. It's a very urbanized area.
Yeah.
The idea of going into the forest and being surrounded by trees and surrounded by Mother Nature, they looked at the difference and whether or not that made a difference in their health. In this particular study, they looked at whether or not you spent time in Mother Nature per week, significant time in Mother Nature, and not time in Mother Nature. They looked at the stress hormones such as cortisol, and they discovered that people that spend forest bathing more time in Mother Nature had less stress hormones going through their body than people who didn't spend time forest bathing.
That's really interesting.
How do you like it? I kind of find this interesting. So putting it all together, number one, I think we ought to quit the show, Tom. Go and take a vacation. Stop the show and keep it from going. I think we ought to go into the forest and bathe. But I like this concept, and I like the term forest
bathing.
Because
really,
as soon as you say forest bathing, people go, what are you talking about?
Where's the pool? Really interesting. 800-462-7413, our number. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Dozman, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba. Right away, let me just say thanks for doing this show. I mean, it's a rare thing these days to get good humor and good advice in this kind of media wasteland that we live in. So
thank you. Thank you very
How
much.
How nice
thank
is that? Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's
very
a 10.
Much. Yeah. It's a 10. Cool. So I'm calling on behalf of my wife, who has a pretty severe salt sensitivity. You know, she did a physical a few years back, and she was like borderline high blood pressure. So she's been very conscious of avoiding salt. So we do not eat any packaged, you know, processed foods. We buy things in bulk. You know, we eat organic. We kind of follow the Mediterranean diet. There's no salt shaker around at all. So we were drinking water from a spring, and then in the spring of this year with all the overflow of the rains, we tested the water, and it had a lot of nitrates in it. So we have a reverse osmosis system in the house, which in theory removes all the salt. But she still says she tastes it. And I've been married to her for 38 years, and she does not make things up. But, you know, she drinks water from our tap or even water from, you know, like bottled water as an example. And her tongue swells up a little bit, and she gets cracks in her tongue. She still feels thirsty. And something's going on, and I don't know how else to say it. I mean,
First of all, if she's drinking bottled water and it tastes salty to her, it's not in the water. I mean, so that's number one, because bottled water has no salt. It's tested. They look at it. They make sure they bring it from a spring, especially if you get water that's purified type water. One thing you can do, by the way, if you want to get something that is flat and has nothing in it at all when you're drinking water, is you get distilled water. Distilled water is completely different. Everything is removed from distilled water. If you get water out of the tap, and it's a municipal tap, it's going to have, you know, some fluoride in it. It's going to have maybe some chlorine, some other chemicals that are basically, you know, sanitizing the water in a very tiny amount, but it's got it in there. Are you on well water or city water?
We have well water, and I've tested the well, and everything is good in terms of, you know, contaminants.
By the way, nobody on city water thinks about nitrates. That's why I knew you probably had well water. Do you ever think about nitrates, Tom, in city water?
No.
No, see. Do you ever think about water?
Never given a thought. Right now, I'm holding a bottle of water.
And what does it say?
Purified water, mineral added for
Oh, interesting. For
taste.
What? Tom just brought an interesting point up, and I want to correct what I just said. Bottled water may have minerals in it that your wife can taste. Distilled water, though, has nothing in it. So one option that I would recommend for her is try distilled water and see what it tastes like. Because if she doesn't have any taste with distilled water, then she just has a hypersensitive tongue. And distilled water, to me, tastes flat. I don't know if you've ever tried distilled water, but we use distilled water in our irons at home because otherwise they gunk up with calcium because we have well water.
Right.
And distilled water will have nothing in it. I would try that for her. That's number one. Now, the second question is, does she have a yeast infection in her mouth? as they're too much Candida. Candida lives with us. We live with it. It's part of our life space. And there's something called the clotrimazole troche. It's an antifungal troche that she can put in her mouth. You take it for 5 to 10 days. And that can reduce the yeast in your mouth. And if you have too much yeast in your mouth, that can produce a change in taste. So I would also consider talking to her doctor about trying a round of that and see whether or not that will make a difference. Because she might have yeast overgrowth in her mouth, Candida overgrowth. And number two, have her drink distilled water and see if anything goes on. If she doesn't taste anything in distilled water, her answer might be to drink distilled water. So I would look at that. I would look at that. Because water that comes out of the ground is still not sterilized. And distilled water, the way they do it is they make steam, and then the steam basically then is then cooled, and that's the water from distilled water. So it comes out of steam. Whereas the water from your well comes out of the ground.
I get it, yeah.
Good luck. Let us know what happens. Be very interested.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you so much for taking the call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the call. What's troche?
A troche is a lozenge. You know, lozenge, you put it in your mouth and it basically, you put it in your mouth and you suck on it and then the medicine comes out of
the
mouth.
Do you look at the store and find troche?
I've never looked at, you mean, do they say troche?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
I'll tell you. Because if we don't use the scientific word as doctors, we can't charge anything. So we can't say the word lozenge. That doesn't get any money. We have to say the word troche. Thank you very much. Pay me $100. If I say lozenge, you can buy it over the counter. You're not going to pay me $100. I have to have a fancy word. Clotrimazole troche. You can't even spell clotrimazole. I get the big boxes of Family Doc for saying that.
That's great. 800-462-7413 if you'd like to talk with a good doc. 1-800-462-7413. Now, before the break, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite backseat drivers,
ba-ba-da-da,
the Grammar Police. Okay, Zorba, this one is actually from the Fish Police.
The Fish Police. Okay.
A listener named Pam.
Sounds fishy to me.
Listener named Pam from Spring Green, Wisconsin, sent us the following email. Hi, Zorba and Tom. I enjoy your program, but must take issue with your constant denigration of the humble smelt. Smelt are wonderful when battered and fried. My dad and I used to spend hours cleaning and preparing smelt.
Yuck.
He was a fantastic, funny storyteller, and we'd spend our time cooking, laughing, and eating these crispy, tasty little fish. My dad raised 7 children and made each one of us feel we were the favorite. Of course, I was his true favorite. He would be outraged.
Smelt, that's why.
He would be outraged at your smelt defamation and would chalk it up to poor smelt cooking techniques. Seriously, keep up the good work, but try to lay off the nasty smelt remarks.
Yeah, you know, see now, my memory with my father is completely different. He would go out to Lake Michigan because he lived in Chicago. He'd have a lantern up, would catch the smelt. He'd bring him in, plop him on the kitchen table, and make my mother clean the smelt. I mean, he had the fun catching the smelt, smoking cigars, drinking a beer, Schlitz. You knew some Schlitz, okay. Schlitz beer. And my mother would be in the kitchen getting rid of all these sort of guts, saying, Arthur, how could you bring this stuff back? So my memories are of that. And then when she made that, my mother was not the best cook in the world. Let's just put it that way. I mean, liver was like the high point of what we would eat, you know, eat for dinner, you know, maybe some lamb chops. So I think she's right. She's right. I want to apologize. I want to apologize to all the smelt lovers out there. I have denigrated the smelt, and for that I am truly sorry. I will now raise the smelt to haute culture, and my hope is that sometime in New York City, in La Bardine, which is a Michelin 3-star restaurant, that one day they too will have smelt on their menu so that the people of the world can finally appreciate what Wisconsin smelt has to offer.
Really?
So please accept my sincere and deep-felt apology for all of you smelt lovers out there.
Really good and
heartfelt.
Heartfelt. Yes.
That's right.
What a good doctor.
I just feel good. Makes my heart just all warm and fuzzy inside.
Do you feel Zorba was cruel with how he dealt with smelt? Do you feel
dealt
the need
smelt.
To?
Not bad.
Do you feel good. The need to stick up for his constantly battered fish?
Battered.
Just okay. post on our Facebook page or send us
gently,
an email.
Please, gently, smelt lovers. Only I only want kind remarks. Zorba at WPR.org, or of course through Facebook.
Our tasty recipe coming up, along with more.
Non-smelt recipe,
no
by
smelt,
the way. No smelt. No smelt in this recipe.
More of your calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Okay.
You ready?
No, but we'll go anyway.
Okay.
I'm Tom Clark here with Dr. Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number to call if you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, grilled veggie sandwiches.
You know, when my mother had a sandwich, when I had a sandwich when I was a kid, it was Wonder Bread. You remember Wonder Bread?
Oh, yeah.
Build strong bodies in 9 ways, which meant it was white bread with vitamins. But, of course, all vitamins, there was enriched flour. That's how we got rid of vitamin issue. White bread, Oscar Mayer bologna. Mustard, and maybe a piece of lettuce. And, toasted cheese sandwiches maybe were a variety, and then maybe the occasional burger. This was it.
Yeah, that's more varied than what my mother gave me.
What did she give
Except
you?
For treats.
Yeah.
Little Jones sausage links.
Oh, wow. For
on,
a treat.
On
white bread.
White bread.
You see, because you might do your mom. Well, welcome to the new world, where vegetables actually are more important than cured meats. And what we have is we want to look at different ways to make sandwiches that are really good and really tasty, that meet our needs. And the more vegetarian we are, really, the better off we are. The less animal protein we eat, the better off we are, because we are an animal protein society. You know, we treasure animal protein. So looking at different ways to do things are great. That's how we decided to do a grilled veggie sandwich.
Yeah.
So first of all, we're going to make hummus. You can make hummus if you want to. You could actually buy hummus, but let's make it. We're going to start out with 1.5 cups of garbanzo beans.
1.5 cups garbanzo beans.
Or chickpeas, garbanzo beans. Mm-hmm. And that's, of course, out of a can where you have to cook them. 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
2 teaspoons of tahini. Juice from half a lemon. And a little salt to taste.
We'll
talk about that. Mm-hmm. Now, the grilled veggies. You're going to need 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
1 teaspoon of ground cumin.
1 little tea ground cumin.
1/2 teaspoon of ground coriander.
1/2 little tea ground coriander.
I want to talk about coriander for a second. Actually, I want to talk about spices. I was one where I take my spices and I keep my spices and I look at it. My daughter, Vanessa and Mitchell, they came in one day and they looked at the spices and they said, "How old are these spices?" And my answer was, "I don't know." Well, they picked out one of the spices and the price for the spice was stamped on with purple ink. That's how they used to, used to be you went to the store and they would stamp the price on the bottle. That means it was more than 35 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Spice. So we then looked through our cabinet and decided, you know what, maybe getting small amounts of spices, looking at it and then smelling it, because they actually over time are not as good as fresh spices. Mm-hmm. Coriander is a perfect example. It just doesn't taste as good after a while.
Okay.
1/2 teaspoon of coriander, 1/4 teaspoon of salt.
1/4 little tea salt.
Salt is always the same. Salt never changes.
Yeah.
Okay, now the veggies. A zucchini sliced horizontally. An eggplant sliced into 1/2-inch slices. That's right. You said that really very good. A red pepper cut into strips.
A red Pepper cut into strips.
That's right. An onion cut into 1-inch rounds.
An onion cut into 1-inch rounds.
I love that, what you're saying.
Yeah.
8 slices of bread toasted.
8 slices of toasted bread.
No, bread toasted.
Come on, 8 slices of bread.
Toasted.
not toasted bread. You don't want any toasted bread.
No, we want bread toasted. It's the French way, bread toasted.
Okay.
You know, like Lake Wisconsin. If somebody came up here and they said Wisconsin Lake, you'd say, where's that? But if you say Lake Wisconsin, they know what you're saying. You've got to say things the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to make the hummus. Once again, you can buy it. But the way you make it is in a blender, you add the garbanzo beans, the olive oil, tahini, the juice from a half lemon, a pinch of salt, and you pulse it until it's smooth, mm-hmm. adding a little water if needed. Then you put the salt in and taste it. And it mm-hmm. actually is good. Fresh hummus tastes really good, and you can buy it, of course. So heat a grill or a grill pan over medium heat. Spray it with cooking spray because that's a way you can get things to move around without adding calories. And in a small bowl, whisk together olive oil, cumin, ground coriander, and salt. Then take the veggies, transfer it to the grill. You're going to put it on a grill or you're mm-hmm. going to put it on a nonstick pan, cooking each side for 1 to 2 minutes, including that eggplant. Taking into mind the red bell pepper will take a little bit longer because it has more water in it, more moisture than the others. Remove the veggies and immediately brush them with a little olive oil, the olive oil spice mixture, because that little olive oil really mm-hmm. makes a difference. Then assemble the sandwich. Smear a tablespoonful of hummus on each slice, arrange a few zucchini slices, eggplant slices, red bell pepper strips, and onion on each half bread. Top with the other side of the bread. If you really love hummus like I do, you put a little bit of hummus mm-hmm. on the other side, and then you eat.
Yeah, I can't put a slice of bologna on there.
Cannot put a slice of Oscar Mayer bologna on the sandwich. It'll ruin the whole idea. But if you don't want to ruin your idea mm-hmm. and you want to have a veggie, guess where you can get this, Tom?
Let's see. Call and make an appointment with Zorba at his office.
That's right.
And he'll hand you the recipe.
And I'll hand you the recipe. Ka-ching, ka-ching. Go to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That's Zorba Pastor on Your Health. You go to ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Back to the phones we go. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I am a producer of kidney stones. Only I don't get paid for it. Isn't that something? Anyway, I have high purines and sodium in my stones.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And I was wondering, I overheard you a few weeks ago talking about protein drinks and diet. And are protein drinks good for me since I already have high protein in my kidney stones?
Mm-hmm. Good question. It's a good question because, for the most part, we don't really understand why some people are stone makers and others are not. Because if you look at the urine of non-stone makers and you look at the urine of stone makers, a lot of them, no difference. It's just some people produce more stones than others. And we've got some ideas. There's no absolute answer to what we have to say. If you're looking at a protein drink, there are some protein drinks that are made with soy protein and some protein drinks that are made with whey. And soy protein will not have the same amount of calcium, you know, that whey will have, because whey will be calcium loaded. But when I looked at the evidence of calcium and kidney stones, I really don't see any evidence that going on a low-calcium diet alters kidney stones, regardless of what you have within your kidney stones. I want to go back. How often have you had your stone former? How often have you had stones?
I've been producing stones since 1992.
That's a long time.
And I've had two lithotripsies, one in 2010 mm-hmm. and another in 2017. Mm-hmm. And in 2010, the stone was a 13 millimeter.
Oh, it's a nice size one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and then in 2017, mm-hmm. it was a 9, and mm-hmm. I still have 3 stones, 2 in one kidney, 1 in the other right now, and they're anywhere from a 6 to an 8. And so they told me I need to lower my purines and my sodium and drink lots of mm-hmm. water. Well, I am a meat eater, mm-hmm. but I am overweight. I just went through mm-hmm. cancer last year. I have been overweight for years, and I'm trying to lose weight. Do I need to go on a vegetarian diet or something like that? And how am I going to do that when I am a meat eater?
Well, you, actually, the way you said that, how am I going to do it because I'm a meat eater? Immediately means
a meat lover
means that there's a potentially a failure in going on a vegetarian diet.
I know.
If you are a meat eater and you're going on a vegetarian diet, it's not a very satisfying diet because vegetarians' diet, I know you'd be shocked by this, have no meat in them. And I know that's shocking. They have no meat. And if you try to have a veggie burger and think it's going to taste like a hamburger, it doesn't. It tastes like a veggie burger. You know, I've never tasted a veggie burger that tastes like a hamburger. They may come close, but they're not the same. You know, they're not the same. But more importantly, I don't know if going on a vegetarian diet is going to make any difference at all. And that's the real problem. I, too, by the way, am a fellow stone maker.
Well,
I passed a couple of stones. Thank you very much. I passed a couple of stones myself. For some reason, I don't have pain when I pass them. I can't figure that out because they're supposedly, I mean, they are really, really painful. And the main thing I do is I've increased the amount of water that I have, so I'm pretty well hydrated, although I find it difficult to drink water if I'm not thirsty. And that's about it. Are you on anything? Are you on Tamsulosin or?
They didn't put me on anything, and I'm wondering, is there something that can break up the stones or dissolve them?
No, there's nothing that breaks up the stones.
No, they put me on nothing, and even I produce calcium all by myself. I do not have to take calcium vitamins or anything. So I guess I'm trying to figure out what kind of diet. You know, there's the DASH diet, there's keto. Well, keto is nothing but protein.
First of all, the problem with the stone is, okay, let's assume you're going on a vegetarian diet. Let's also assume you don't really like the vegetarian diet. You know, you don't actually know what's going on because you may not produce a new stone but once every 3 to 5 years. In other words, and so you've got stones in there already. It's not as if they have a way of looking and saying, okay, you have 5 stones or 3 stones or 4 stones, and then you end up getting a CAT scan every 3 to 6 months, and you say, well, we think there's another stone forming. Nobody's going to do that. They're not going to do the test radiation. So here it is. You're stuck in a vegetarian diet for maybe 3 to 5 years, and you don't know whether or not it's working, and you're not happy because you're a meat lover or a meat eater. So the long and the short of it is, my answer is we don't know if a vegetarian diet is going to be useful in your case because we know that vegetarians also make kidney stones.
Okay. That was my whole question because I'm worried about my kidney stones. I just do not want to increase everything. And I don't have to have meat every day. I can go without it, but I know I have to control my carbs. I'm a bread lover, too.
Got to do it. So. Meat lover and bread lover. It's burgers tonight.
Potatoes. Yum.
Thanks so much for your call.
And thank you very much. I appreciate your information. Have a nice day.
You too.
1-800-462-7413. Before the break now, Zorba, hold on a second. Let me pull out my smartphone and check the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. It's time to fire up the segment we call Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
Did you believe it when I said I'd pull out my smartphone?
Yeah, no, you know what? My eyes glazed over, and I was looking at even the lack of the flip top. I mean, you don't even carry, do you carry a phone with you?
Oh, no. The only phone I use
I know it's
has
a landline.
Cord.
It's got a cord on it. I got it.
And
I got
AT&T.
I got it. I'm with you, baby. I'm with you.
Anyway, first, Lynn in Wichita, Kansas writes, I eat lots of fruits and vegetables, and I am currently eating grapes daily. My sister and a good friend both say that grapes have so much sugar that I should eat them less often. My A1C is very good. So, Zorba, what do you think about grapes?
Well, first of all, if your A1C is good, you're eating okay. Grapes are loaded with sugar and very little fiber. So they really are not the best fruit that you can eat. But on the other hand, they're better than eating a pastry.
Yeah.
And your hemoglobin A1C, a measurement of your diabetes, is under good control. So it depends on how much grapes you're eating. I think it's okay to eat some grapes, but I think a whole package of grapes every day would be just a bit too much.
And this message came to us from Susan in Phillips, Wisconsin. She's referring to a recent listener question about who exactly needs to get a measles booster shot. Susan writes, dude, The National Institutes of Health.
Dude.
I think that's
dude.
You.
That's me. I'm the dude. I'm the dude. That's right. I'm the dude.
The National.
I'm the Big Lebowski, right? I'm the dude.
The National Institutes of Health is recommending that adults in the baby boomer range get a measles, mumps, rubella, MMR booster. They're finding that the immunity hasn't remained lifelong in those of us vaccinated.
Well, first of all, a lot of people, most boomers never got a measles, mumps, and German measles booster. Some of them did, some of them did not, you know, get an injection in the first place, because many of them got measles, many of them got mumps, and many of them got German measles, which is rubella in there. Mm-hmm. We'll see what the CDC ultimately has to say. It's still not, this is not an open and shut case right now of whether or not we should get boosters. At the present time, it's not clear who should get it. And we have to look, by the way, at, quote, the measles epidemic. There are spots where there are measles that occur within the U.S. Most of us are nowhere near that spot at all. If you're in a hot zone where there are measles, if you are in areas where that occurs, that becomes a different issue. And yes, there are a lot of measles cases, but nowhere near where the measles cases were years ago. So I think at this case, the jury is out.
Have a healthy living question for the good doc? Or maybe you just want to whine about grapes? Or perhaps needle him Ooh. About the measles shot? Just post on our Facebook page.
Oh, Tom.
Or you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, of course. Another interesting topic, too. And we'll be quacking up all right here on Zorba Pastor and Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number to call is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, sleeping with the TV on can make you gain weight?
Right. Very interesting. Kind of an interesting article. So, article from the National Institute of Health. That's where the research was. And it looked at whether or not sleep made a difference. So, it's part of a large study, 44,000 women. So, it's only women. It's a breast cancer study. They're sisters. So, it's called the Sisters Study. One woman may have breast cancer, and they're looking to see what are the chances are the other woman may have breast cancer and so on. But they also looked within this particular study of they looked at how much women actually slept. Okay, so they filled out physical, they had physical examinations on a regular basis, lifestyle questionnaires, how did they eat, how much exercise did they do, did they smoke, and so on. And then they looked at sleeping at night. They looked at the number of hours of sleeping, and they asked, did you go to sleep with the TV on? So they really looked at TV in the room, the light of television. They looked at other lights in the room too, but for the most part it was light in television. And they discovered, lo and behold, over a period of time, sort of a 5-year period of time within the study, that the women who slept with the light on the room were much more likely to be 10 to 11 pounds heavier than the women who didn't sleep with light in their room. In other words, if you sleep with the TV on, you're more likely to be heavier. And you're 30% more likely to be overweight, to be obese. Now, you might say, hey, wait a minute, I sleep in the room and I'm watching TV. And
hey,
I'm
wait a minute, I'm sleeping in the room and I'm watching TV.
And I'm snacking. Yeah. No, it didn't appear to be, because they also fill out questionnaires on how they're eating. Didn't appear to be snacking at night. It appeared to be the television that was on in the room in the evening. And the analysis that came on with it, the editorial said this really highlights behavior, the fact that it may be the light in the room actually changes melatonin production within the brain, that the brain may actually be interested in thinking, hey, it's wide awake and doing other things, and it may be different in how we're metabolizing food that's in our gut that happens to be sitting in our gut from earlier. But I find it interesting because this may be a lifestyle change that you can make that's really easy that will help you lose weight. Sleep in a dark room.
But maybe if you're in bed and the TV is on, you don't sleep.
Well, that's what I mean. You may not sleep nearly as deeply. That may be part of it. That's actually a major part of the issue. We know the more and more we know about sleep, the more and more we know it's important. We know that it reduces the risk of diabetes. We know that it's important for making ourselves feel good when it's restful. And it may be that the light in the room, a lot of people watch television and go to sleep with the tube on. And the answer to this is, if you have the tube on, you may be more likely to gain weight. So pull the plug, go to sleep, make the room dark, and shed those pounds.
1-800-462-7413 is our number, 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, back to the phones, welcoming a listener in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, I have a little problem here, and it's a weird problem. I've been having pain, like, inside of my elbows, not the outside, the inside of my elbow. It's very sensitive. And it runs down my arm, and it affects my ring finger on both hands. And they're telling me it's like trigger finger. It gets stuck, but it's painful. And if I try to open a jar or grab something, I feel the pain run down my arm and by my elbow. It hurts, and it's very, very sensitive. And my fingers, my two ring fingers, are in pain, and it feels like the joint gets warm, very hot, and I don't know what it is. I don't know how to...
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions. Now, trigger finger is very specific. It's where there's a nodule in the palm, and then when you try to open up your finger, it gets stuck. You can't open it up. It goes boing, like a trigger. Do you have that?
Yes. I press on the joint, like on my palm, and it hurts, and if I bend down my finger, it gets stuck.
It gets stuck. There are two things that may be going on. First of all, that can be trigger finger. Trigger finger is get stuck. I had trigger finger. I recently had trigger finger surgery. And basically, they got rid of the nodule. They actually didn't get rid of the nodule. They got rid of the ligament that went top of the nodule. No longer gets stuck when I open up my finger. And it was very painful, very uncomfortable. And sometimes that pain can radiate back upwards to the elbow because it just hurts. That's how the brain works. But here, you may also have something going on in your neck. You may have a C5, C4, C5, C6, where the nerves that are coming out of the back of your neck may actually be getting stuck, either the superficial nerves that are sort of within the skin and beneath the skin, or the neck itself going through the spinal cord in the neck around the third, fourth, and fifth vertebrae. And that can be fixed actually by range of motion exercises often in your neck. Just like people have kind of slip discs in their lower back, they can have sort of a slip disc or a disc that's protruding and pushing onto a nerve in their neck. And for that, neck range of motion activities might help. And that's an easy fix to see if it doesn't. And we'll put it on our website. I'll connect a couple of YouTubes for range of motion activities of your neck. And I would try that and see if that helps a little bit. Trigger finger, you need an injection or surgery to get rid of it. But the neck stuff, you can do some range of motion. And it sounds to me like this might be coming from your neck. Because is it in your upper arm at all? Or is it just from the elbow?
No, just the elbow. But the inside of my elbow, it's very sensitive, very... It hurts to touch it.
Yeah, you may have two things going on here. I hark back to old Dr. Kellogg. Dr. Kellogg was in World War II. I worked with him when I first started practice. World War II in Korea. And he used to say, when there was more than one thing going on, he said, well, maybe they have fleas and lice. And I think it's because he was in World War II in Korea. I don't think of fleas and lice together, but he did. In other words, there are two things going on. And indeed, you have the trigger finger because you can tell if you have it.
Yeah.
But you may be having something going on in your neck. I try some range of motion activities of the neck and see if it decreases it.
And that would help? That you think it's radiating down to my inside of my elbow?
It could easily do that. The C5, I'd have to look. There's something called the dermatological map, which tells which nerves, whether or not it's C4, C5, or C6, actually goes down. If you go to the web and you put dermatome, D-E-R-M-A-T-O-M-E, dermatome, and then you look at images on Google, it'll show you a map, and it'll show you which nerves are basically being innervated from the neck and from the back all the way through the body.
Oh,
and they
okay.
go through in which parts of the skin. And if you look at that and you see roughly where it is, what you're describing is a cervical nerve root. And that's where the pain may be coming from. So it may not just be coming from the trigger finger. It might be coming down from the neck. And the treatment for that for most people is not anything surgically, but just some general range of motion activities to sort of get that disc to move a little bit, a millimeter or 2 millimeters, and stop pinching that nerve. That's a common problem that often will do it with a little physical therapy or exercise.
Oh, okay. I'll try that definitely. So trigger fingers. Injection, huh?
Yeah, trigger finger is an injection, and if they sometimes one injection works, and it is painful. I've had it done, but it gets rid of the trigger finger, and for me, it worked for like I had 2 injections, and it worked for like 5-10 years. It was really, and for some people, they get one injection, one and done, gets rid of the trigger finger.
What caused the trigger finger?
Bad luck.
Okay.
Bad luck.
I figured I'd get that. Okay.
Bad
got
luck.
It. Okay.
That's what happens. It's genetic. There's a gene issue. Good genes, bad luck. That's what happens.
Okay. All right. So. Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Storban. We'll definitely look into this.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for your call.
Appreciate the call. Have you ever treated anyone with fleas and lice?
No, I haven't. I have not treated anyone with fleas and lice. I've treated people for scabies. Scabies. I've definitely treated for scabies and lice. Scabies, but not fleas and lice.
Okay, Zorba, time again now to machete our way through the wacky thickets of medical quackery. This is Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, here's an email we received from Dorothy in Oregon, Wisconsin. She writes, Dear Zorba and Tom, on a recent show, you suggested that if anyone had unusual or maybe even crazy cure ideas, to send them in, and so I am doing just that. This is from the Everyday Cookbook, which, by the way, has no author.
It's a cookbook without an author. Okay.
And the pages are
the anonymous cookbook.
The pages are so dry and brittle, I'm afraid to touch them.
Got it. Okay.
These are the book's instructions on how to handle a dog bite.
Okay.
The only safe remedy in case of a bite from a dog suspected of madness is to burn out the wound thoroughly with red-hot iron or with lunar caustic for fully 8 seconds so as to destroy the entire surface of the wound. This book also tells you how to bake a pie, pack away furs, and clean corsets.
Clean corsets.
It also has,
I like the cleaning corsets.
It part. Also has chapters on how to make hens lay in winter. Plus, it has how to be a handsome chapter. I'll be 88 at the end of this month, proof that having all the right answers to every situation is also the answer to longevity.
I love it. Well, in this day and age, we don't burn the wound with either caustic or there. We use injections instead. But hey, you know, that's madness. That's true madness, the book.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Now, before we head out, Zorba, let's do the segment where you get yelled at for something you said on the show. Here's another edition
yelled at
of Disagreeing with the Doc. The following email came to us from Robert in Deming, New Mexico. He writes, Dear Zorba and Tom, I've been a long-time listener and enjoy the show immensely. You recently took a call from a woman who is experiencing increasing arthritic pain. She asked about a home remedy that she had heard about, having golden raisins soaked in gin. When I heard this, my ears perked up. I work with our local Optimist Club and am a member of the Knights of Columbus. This puts me in contact with many older gentlemen who over time have talked about this same remedy. They swear by this trick and claim to have learned about it from the old Paul Harvey radio program. Your quick dismissal of this woman's story was rather abrupt and unexpected. You are usually more patient and normally give a little consideration to the placebo value of such home remedies. I hope that in the future you will be a little more considerate of people and their feelings before you go and dash their hopes.
Well, I am sorry if I offended anyone with my quick dismissal of the raisin-soaked in gin. And if the raisin-soaked in gin work for you, by all means, you should use the raisin-soaked in gin. Whether or not there's any scientific merit to the raisin-soaked in gin, I think I would leave up to the double-blind placebo trial that is not going on at the present time and isn't funded by the National Institute of Health. I don't really mean to give a tongue-in-cheek response. But, you know, the reality is sometimes I am abrupt with an answer, and I don't mean to be abrupt. Mm-hmm. I try to be as nice as I can. However, I sometimes have strong opinions, and they come up as abrupt. And if I insult anyone, I apologize for it. But, hey, you know what? That's kind of – I try to be as nice as I can.
And frankly,
I don't think I was not nice to this person. No. I don't think that was the case because I'm really not nice. But other people, like they say, I don't want to say, hey, you have the, you know, raisin soaked in gin. It's the placebo effect. The reality is there's some older people who have that and they find it works for them. And we know mm-hmm. the mental aspects of arthritis are extremely important. So mm-hmm. if you like it, use it.
Yeah. If you want to know who the really nice person is on this show.
It's you. That's right. It's you. I got it, Tom. I got it.
Is something Zorba said raisin red flags
Ooh.
For you?
Ooh.
Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We will see you next week.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget you can find us anytime at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Colonel Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Colburn. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more information on Dr. Zorba Pastor and to listen to current or past episodes, go to ZorbaPastor.org. There you can subscribe to the weekly podcast, and you will find the show archive, Zorba's favorite recipes, his healthy living articles, and other helpful tips heard on the show. That's ZorbaPastor.org.